Hello, I'm Chip Alexandru. In this episode, I cover predicting demand for newly launched products using AI and discuss with Tim Hall, CEO and co-founder at Simporter. I have previously covered AI and analytics in consumer goods in episode 26 with Joel Beal from Alloy. As a reminder, Alloy enables consumer packaged goods companies to get an accurate forecast of demand at SKU level for existing products. It starts at the store level with the local demand signals and visibility into local inventories, aggregates this information across the store network as warehousing and third-party logistics data. All this micro-level data, proprietary to retailers and distributors, is shared via Alloy's platform to be used by manufacturers and brands for better demand and supply chain planning. Simporter is solving a different problem, a very difficult one, and that is how many units of a newly launched product will be sold in the first year. This is a question CPG companies have struggled to answer accurately for many years. Historically, new product development was a sure path to growth. In the recent years, however, large brands struggled to leverage their general awareness to branch out in niches where direct-to-consumer brands resonated better and were able to grow faster and collectively gain share. Simporter uses a mix of established and unstructured data to identify the most recent attributes consumers care about when they make purchasing decisions. In this new normal present, where past pre-COVID data is not entirely valid, the weaker forward-looking signal that Simporter relies on could uncover fresh insights to be used by R&D, consumer insights, operations and brands in consumer goods, and by buyers in retail. Let's listen to Tim on what some of these insights might be, how does Simporter work, and success stories in consumer goods and retail. We'll be back with my three takeaways on AI used in consumer goods. I'm talking to Tim Hall, co-founder and CEO at Simporter. Simporter is an AI tool that predicts sales for new products before they are launched. Simporter was recently selected to take part to the PwC UK Scale program, a program I talked about in the past that aims to scale already successful startups. Tim, thank you for joining. Please introduce yourself and Simporter.
Chip, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. It's a pleasure to be here. I am Tim Hall, co-founder and CEO of Simporter, and we're an AI company that helps larger enterprises get more transparency to consumer demand. We use machine learning models to examine big data and get a very clear bead on whether consumers are going to continue buying certain products based on their attributes, how many they're going to buy, and what those forecasts look like and how they've been disrupted in this time of COVID and epidemic.
So Tim, I'd like to start a bit with a broader topic. New product development isn't the consumer goods top opportunity for growth, but it's also extremely challenging. A large percentage of the new products fail, and with the odds against them, many of the new products are actually variants of past successful products, which initially bring some incremental gains, but after several iterations, result in portfolio complexity and even dilution. So in this context, where do you see the opportunities for the new product development? What can brands do better?
Well, it's a great question. So brands have an advantage. The large brands have an advantage of built-in consumer awareness and perceptions about the large brands. But that also has a reverse side of it, which is sort of fixed expectations of what they deliver that make it hard to have them consumers reimagine them. The people developing extensions of those brands or moving into new areas of those brands have a bit of a challenge to, you know, stake out and define new space, and yet at the same time leverage their brand equity in such a way that it gives them an advantage over, you know, a newer startup kind of brand in that space. So it's a big challenge for people today. It's a lot harder than it was when I started out consumer products 30 years ago, where you could, you know, launch a new item and then really hit it hard with TV advertising and radio and kind of forced distribution. The tables have turned. And the biggest reason for that is consumers are much more in control. A lot has been written about this, but, you know, in the old days, it was sort of top-down push marketing. And nowadays, it's more peer-to-peer, where consumers broadly make their decisions based on their own input, on peer-to-peer information from, say, social media or from reading product reviews. And it's a much more kind of viral environment when it comes to generating new trial and repurchases.
I'd like to touch on the topic of personalization. Very important topic. It's much discussed. A lot of things are implemented, very relevant, starting from customer communication and engagement, all the way through distribution, especially if we think direct to consumer. Now, in designing and manufacturing new products, personalization is, or in new product development, personalization is more complicated. Do you see that personalization will touch more and more this area of new product development?
Yeah, it's a great question. Our clients, you know, are usually thinking about how they can support a very large national footprint. You know, we support large CPG companies, and they're designed to have products flow into, you know, all of the distribution touch points that they're currently servicing. They're not designed to do little niche brands. Now, on the other side, you have tens of thousands of small companies that can go mine little niches, and they do pretty well. And, you know, they can tap into a very narrow group of consumers, find a particular lane. They can have purpose-built websites. They can have Shopify platforms. They can be on Amazon. And they can create these little niche followings. And part of their exit strategy is the big brands will buy them once they've kind of proven that out. So the challenge for the larger manufacturers is to kind of emulate that. And, you know, even though it's sometimes hard to get a product greenlit into manufacturing production, if it's focused on this very narrow niche, that's an important way for the larger enterprises to compete today, to figure out how to do that incubation, take an innovation, find one or two particular consumer lanes, niche lanes, and mine them and exploit that. And they really have to double down on their research capabilities, understanding all of the consumer nuances. And it's no longer a market where you can kind of be comfortable working only for Gen Pop. If you only work for the general population, you kind of get stuck in that 2-3% year-on-year growth if you're lucky. And meanwhile, all these little, you know, upstarts come around and start cannibalizing your market share. So you really have to take a different approach of thinking in terms of smaller, niche-oriented, and figuring out where to manufacture and exploit those opportunities.
Tim, let's move on to Simporter. So what does it do and how does it work?
Thanks for that question. We're an AI solution, and it's software that manufacturers and retailers use. And it is a plug-and-play kind of model where you can, you know, there's no big implementation period. You can access the software and examine how products are going to perform. And it works for products that are already in the marketplace, and it works all the way up the value chain to either white space or constant validation to show you how will a product perform if you decide to bring it to market. And the way we developed this was to answer the burning question of, you know, if I make this product and put it out in the marketplace, how many units am I going to really move in the first year? I've been in consumer products for a good 30 years, and that problem bedeviled me going back to the 1980s of trying to get an accurate forecast of a new item. So what we do is we pull massive amounts of data from four really large data sets. We're a partner with Nielsen globally, so we have access to Nielsen data for any category that our clients are working in. We run consumer surveys, Monadic consumer surveys, against online panels for each category we work with. Then we pull large amounts of data from both social media, e-commerce, and search. And on the social media and e-commerce area, we run natural language processing to figure out what are the leading indicators from consumers today that influence if they're going to try a new product, if they like a particular ingredient, if they like a product enough to repurchase it. And so we examine the sentiment and the likability of products and sort of how sticky they are and what those adoption cycles look like. And all that goes on in a very sophisticated engine. And because it's AI or machine learning, that it gets more and more accurate as it keeps learning from the prior data. And that all sounds kind of techy, but we designed this to be really usable. And so our clients can just log in, see a dashboard, and every product, whether it's something new that hasn't been launched yet or something in the market, is very simply and visually described in terms of here's how many units it's going to do, here's how much market share it's going to generate, here's how much dollar volume it's going to generate. And it allows the client to do what-if scenarios to figure out what they should do, you know, maybe drive distribution, maybe cut promotion to maximize both their revenue, market share, and even margin opportunities.
When you mentioned Nielsen Global Data and then social media and search, these are very broad. Do you cover all consumer verticals and all categories, or you do it a little bit as there is consumer need, and then you do a little bit of work before that in order to make sure that all the relevant categories are represented on your platform?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we do kind of activate each category as we have client interest in that category. And then we activate some categories where we think we're going to have client interest in the future. We are really solid in food and beverage, in toys and non-durables. We work with Calvin Klein and Tommy Hilfiger. So we do a bit of work in apparel. And we support both brands like the Unilevers of the world, as well as retailers like Carrefour. And so we've got a pretty broad portfolio of categories, but we develop expertise, that is to say the software develops expertise uniquely for each category as we activate it.
Could you comment a little bit on the differences between geographies? How do you treat while working in, I mean, you mentioned Carrefour, right? That's a global retailer hypermarket, but also in different, as you go to different countries, there are different languages, different local specifics, and so on and so forth. How are you able to actually use those local insights in the platform?
Yeah, great question. So the first challenge obviously is language, because we run natural language processing. So we always have to have local language experts to kind of check and train the NLP model. We just launched a program for a big partner in Russia. And so we have natural, you know, Russia first language Moscovites actually examining the lexicon and making sure that the AI understands this. There are models that help you with translation, but we really need humans in that mix. So we've got local people in each market as we activate it to make sure that we've got the right, you know, quality control on the natural language processing. So that's step one. Step two is to understand the differences in the social behavior, social media behavior and activity in each market. For example, we're activating Brazil right now. And in Brazil, e-commerce is much less of a deal than it is in other markets in Europe and the United States. It's maybe for our clients, it's maybe 3-5% of the business. But we still draw a lot of really important data out of product reviews that consumers post publicly on e-commerce. But we have to weight that to understand, change the weighting there to understand that that's a much smaller, a little bit more digitally savvy segment of the population than the rest of it. And so our data scientists will adjust the weighting of each of our inputs. We've got thousands of different inputs for each forecasting model, and they'll weight those differently depending on those market conditions.
Are you also covering China? And I'm thinking China because of their different social media and even search properties that are available, and generally just a different consumer behavior, different channels.
Yeah, we're not currently in China or Asia proper either. We have a lot of challenges there, both dealing with character language, dealing with very, very different architecture of social media. It's definitely on our roadmap, but that would be a 2021 opportunity for us.
Tim, could you share some success stories?
We have to stay confidential about our clients, but we've had really great success in the early R&D kind of stages, as well as products that are going to market or in market. So, for example, with the early R&D processes, our clients will use our software to kind of get a holistic understanding of what consumers are looking for in their category. And what's really cool about the software is it starts finding those conversations. You know, consumers are satisfied by this solution for a need, but they're dissatisfied by this one. Getting really deeply down into the granularity of what consumer behavior is and what their need benefit architecture looks like. But what's cool about natural language processing is it will follow those consumer conversations outside of the subject category. And so if we're looking at, say, stain removal for fabric in the laundry category, our software found really cool insights about stain removal from other categories. And we were actually able to tell one of our clients, they used the software and discovered that certain features that were going on in skincare, like serums that were really effective at cleansing skin, could become useful and relevant and interesting to consumers in laundry, which seems really far apart, but it made a lot of sense once they saw it. So they're able to take those findings and insights from this kind of holistic examination of the consumer and apply it and come up with really cool new product concepts that are headed to marketplace. So that's kind of how we work early stage. We also validate products to show our clients, you know, what is going to work today in the post-COVID environment or in the COVID environment versus what worked just 6 months ago. And most of our clients have got dozens of innovations in their pipeline, and some of them are still valid today, but some of them need to be reworked because the consumers are so different. Their consumer behaviors are different today. And so we helped one major client in the vitamin space rejigger their innovation portfolio for next year to focus on what really mattered to consumers. And it wasn't just immunity fighting vitamins, but a whole range of needs that consumers now have that they didn't have just 6 months ago. And so that worked really well. And then finally, when it comes to forecasting, we helped a major retailer improve their sales in hard goods by about 9% year on year by both ranking the assortments. You know, they had hundreds of manufacturers who would bring them different ideas and tell them, well, you know, this is going to be the newest, hottest product this year. But using our software, they're able to get a better ranking of prioritization so they could be more judicious about what went into their assortment. But it also showed them opportunities that the retailer was missing that other retailers in other markets were doing really well with. And it kind of showed them the opportunity costs of not having those products in their assortment. So they're able to go source those and bring those in and have a better offering altogether. And so that particular retailer in a market where the economy was tough and most of their competitors were looking at 2% year-on-year comps, we helped them drive 9% year-on-year comps. So we were really proud of that.
These are great examples. For the final question, I would like to go back to something that you mentioned earlier, and that's the world we are living in, the COVID crisis. So this generated major disruptions for consumers, for retailers, for brands. What key changes have you seen either in your work in consumers or in the looking at the data or in requests that the retailers and the brands are actually making to you versus before the crisis?
There are two jobs for people in this space. The first one is making sure supply and demand are balanced. That's obviously where our predictions tool are really helpful. You know, we developed a COVID application to understand peak surges in demand by market, which was fueled in part by understanding the COVID transmission rates. And we were actually able to diagnose a period where transmission rates go up to such a point that panic shopping or stockpiling is going on. We all know, you know, the stories of the unbelievably hard to find toilet paper. Many, many products got stockpiled by consumers and went out of stock. Things like baby formula or diapers or certain meats like chicken and beef became very scarce, not just the hand sanitizers. And so job one is to make sure that that's properly rationalized and that they have the latest inputs on supply and demand on the demand side. And so our demand sensing really helps them see, as each market contends with the growth in COVID, where is the tipping point where, you know, consumers are stockpiling, but there's a tipping point where they're just not going to the stores for a while. They've stockpiled enough. They're frightened. You know, we've identified a scare index where each particular market is scared off of going to retail, whether it's even for pickup. And so we're able to isolate that market by market. And I think both retailers and the manufacturers can benefit from that data to understand it, because unfortunately, certainly in the United States, we're seeing a second wave. Let's hope it's muted, but you know, COVID, I wish it was in the rearview mirror, but it's not. And so that's job one, is getting supply demand right. Job two for the brands and the retailers out there is understanding how consumer needs are changing for the long term. So we work with clients in household cleaning products, laundry products, things like that. Obviously, you know, there are needs you have today regarding COVID and your concern about virus that are different than they were a year ago. But you have to understand, what is a consumer motivation? Is it fear? Is it they're just trying to be diligent? Is it convenience? I need to do a lot of cleaning, but do I need to do it fast? You know, is that more important than the thoroughness? I'm going to clean more frequently, so I want things that'll help me clean frequently, not deeply. And so those are really important consumer segmentation questions, psychographic questions. All the data that precedes March of 2020 is not really valid. And so brands and retailers really need to get their arms around the new normal for consumers and how to best meet their needs. And the important point I raise with our clients is, this isn't a time to retrench. You know, we're also seeing the recession looming. It doesn't mean just hunker down. This is actually a time to stand up and grab market share by providing what the consumer needs. Retail purchases are going to be down. Purchases of discretionary items are going to be down in most major markets. But there's still specific needs that need to be addressed. And the companies that really do their homework to understand what those needs are and then go address them are going to come through this crisis and this recession with greater market share and actually a stronger portfolio of brands than the ones that just hunker down, cut costs, and hope to just get through it.
Tim, this was extremely insightful, and you are in a very exciting space. Thank you very much for the time.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Chip. Thanks so much for having me.
Let's conclude with my three takeaways on AI and consumer goods. Number one, activities performed by CPG companies require decision-making based on a vast amount of internal and external structured and unstructured data. This allows for a multitude, perhaps thousands of AI use cases to be potentially applicable. They could be broadly split into consumer-facing, such as consumer insights, portfolio, pricing, or sales, supply chain and operations optimizations, starting with demand forecasting, and finally, automating support functions. Number two, when the numerous proof of concepts, point solutions, and projects are taken into account, it appears that AI has a relatively broad adoption in consumer packaged goods. But research and interviews show that these investments are generally done organically, bottom-up, and one-off, and CPG is at the middle of the pack of industries applying AI. Number three, there is an opportunity for a broader implementation of AI and sufficient AI cases with a quick payoff. Forecasting demand for new products is such a case. Data to spot future trends is generally public. The challenge is to uncover it from scattered, structured, and unstructured sources and combine it with internal and acquired data to make the right decisions.